Good morning. My name's Linda, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hey, Linda.
I'm Scott Lee. I'm alcoholic. Very grateful to be here and move so many times this morning. Thank you. I haven't been well the last few days, and it broke for me last night. My energy's low, but my spirit is soaring. I love you so. Thank you. Linda and I like to open whatever we do with a quotation from Lois Wilson, which I would imagine everyone knows. She was the co-founder of Al-Anon, and someone asked her one time what she did in the moment of silence before the Serenity Prayer, and she said, "I invite God to the meeting." And it's not that we don't believe God's here. We do believe that. But I always get a special gift when I stop and honor that presence. My great mentor was a fellow named Don from Denver. Many of you know who I'm talking about. He told me he had learned to treat God like a gentleman. It was his experience that gentlemen did not go where they weren't invited. They didn't stay where they weren't made welcome. And so part of my morning is to invite God in to run my life. Not as a, the 12 and 12 says, as a Bush League pitch hitter, but to literally take over. And then to try to conduct myself during the day in a manner that I think will make him welcome moment by moment. The other thing I do in the moment of silence is I ask God to help me not judge any of the speakers. You don't have to do that.
I like it.
But the meetings have gotten better for me everywhere since I started doing that, so you might want to experiment with it. But if you would, please, let's just take a couple of moments and each in our own way literally invite God to join us and bless us with open hearts. Serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
I'm a member of the backroom group in Nashville, Tennessee. I have a home group. I have a sponsor. I sponsor some guys. I have a jail commitment. I have a treatment center commitment. I'm active in the fellowship, and it saved my life. We are privileged, and Lee, thank you, and John, and everyone who was involved in putting this thing on. We're so grateful to have the chance to be here. Linda and I are not experts on any of this. We're students, and we're here to simply share what we've been given so far. And I think that's about it for my part here to start with. You put that down. Are you ready?
You'd think I was the one with the drinking problem. Okay, our workshop today is titled Communicating with God, Ourselves, and Others. And like Scott said, I am not an expert. I'm just going to share my experience. And that experience comes from 60-plus years of looking at people in the disease and 20-plus years of looking at people in recovery. And so everything I share is going to be coming out of that. And I'm going to start off very poorly because I'm going to tell a joke, and I don't tell jokes well, okay? But this joke is, and I label it a joke, so you'll know when I hold my hand up, it's time to laugh, okay? But this lady was just having all kinds of problems with her husband, and finally she had had enough, and so she looked in the phone book, and she found an attorney, and she's going to go down to this attorney, and she makes an appointment, and she's going to get a divorce. And she gets there, and the attorney says, "Okay, fine, I understand, but I've got to ask you a few questions first." And the first question, the attorney said, "Ma'am, do you have a grudge?" And she said, "No, sir, we have a carport." And he goes, No. "What I'm trying to find out is, do you have any grounds?" And she says, "Yes, sir, we own about 2 acres up by the highway." And the attorney says, "No, ma'am, what I'm trying to find out is, does your husband beat you up?" And she says, "No, I get up at 6 o'clock, and that lazy guy sleeps in till 8. By this time, the attorney is really having a difficult time, and he says, "Ma'am, what I'm trying to find out is, why do you want a divorce?" And she says, "Because we can't communicate." Okay. So, if you know, we're herd animals. I learned this from my wonderful father-in-law that I didn't get a chance to meet, but I hear his wisdom through Scott. And this wonderful man, Jackson Lee, he said, "My observation is we're herd animals. That means we're like cattle. We like to hang out together. And if you look at it, we do. We go to meetings. We join social clubs. We like community. You know, we are in community. And so if we're in community, we must learn how to communicate with each other. But why do we have to have a workshop in recovery on communicating with God, ourselves, and others? It's because my observation is the disease doesn't want us to communicate. The disease wants to keep us isolated. If we can be isolated, then the disease, it's like an opening in our soul, like you'd have a scratch, and then bacteria could get in. So if the disease can keep us from communicating with God, ourselves, and others, then it has a chance of taking hold of us. So some of the reasons we have to that we're not able to communicate, for myself it was, I had such low self-esteem. I didn't think I was worthy of your attention, of your eye contact. And it's really difficult to look at because I was a very successful businesswoman when I came into Al-Anon. But my self-esteem, the disease, wanted me to hold on to that low self-esteem so it could command my life. And the other reason is I had a hard time keeping focus because if I was at work, I'd be wondering where he was. You know, if I was at home, I'd be wondering what's going on at work because my former husband and I worked together. I used to have, before I got into Al-Anon, I used to have what I call brownouts, okay? I would be thinking so much that twice I drove on the wrong side of the street. I was thinking to the place that I was an unsafe driver. I was driving while thinking, and it was the disease, you know, it was the disease. And so another reason that we have difficulty communicating is because our words mean such different things. When I was in high school, we had a young man, an exchange student that came from Germany. And he was very delightful, and this was in Odessa, Texas, and a couple of the families decided to take him on a road trip. So they're going down to the hill country, and it's a nice road trip. Everything's going well. And every now and then, this young man from Germany would pick up all of the trash in the car and roll down the window and throw it out. And they thought that was unusual, and they'd go in on a few more miles, and once again, he'd pick up the, you know, their munchy bags of paper, and he'd roll down the window, and they'd throw it out. Finally, they said, you know, whatever his name was, said, you know, it's against the law to litter. Why are you doing that? And he goes, there was a sign that said, fine for littering. And so he thought that was the spot that you were supposed to throw it out. I mean, fine for littering? Okay. That's how confusing our language is. The Eskimos, we have one word for snow. Right? Snow. Y'all all had something in mind when I said snow. The Eskimos have, what, 32 words for snow? I mean, it's just like snow to them comes different. It comes in different descriptions. So our language is very confusing. I think the disease wants me to be isolated, and I think that's why it's called dis-ease. It doesn't want me to find ease. Okay? It doesn't want me to find serenity. Because if there I find calmness, then the disease doesn't have a chance to hang on. So the disease keeps me with my lack of communicating by keeping the voices going in my head. And we'll talk about that some more. You know, some people call it the committee. Some call it the gerbil wheel. What I know that all those voices in my head are really the voices of my defects of character. And I hear them saying, you know, jealousy, envy, anger, procrastination, perfectionism, all of those voices, and they were really going on for a long time until I got through the steps and I realized that that's what the voices were. The other thing is the disease wants us to keep the secrets. And if you have to keep the secrets, you're going to have a chance of giving them away if you talk. So you just don't talk. And that's the way we keep secrets. I think the disease also has us to have a fear of failure. If I don't communicate, then I can't fail. I can't say something wrong. And I think the disease also plants a fear of success in us. if I am successful, then I may have to do it again or I may be judged, okay? Let me give you, and if you think this isn't powerful, let me give you some examples that I would that I would put on myself. I would come into work and people would say, "You sure look nice today." You know what my first thought was? I wonder what they want. You know, what are they really trying to tell me? Maybe they were trying to tell me I looked nice that day, but that's not the way the disease let me think of it. And I bet y'all remember this one. Somebody comes up to you and they go, "Are you okay?" "Well, I was till then." You know? or even the one that, you know, you're at work and your boss comes in and they just have that look. And all of a sudden, the boss comes by you, doesn't say a word, but just has the look. And in a matter of seconds, I am unemployed, looking for a job, having to find food for my children by begging on the street. I mean, just that fast from a look. Body language is very, very powerful. It's part of our communication. And I took it all in personally. The look was probably that he was running late or had a fight with his wife that day. I don't know. But I always took that look meaning something was going to happen to me. Body language is so much a part of our communication is that in Nashville, Tennessee, my neighbor, they've since moved away, but she was a professor at Vanderbilt, and she taught physical education. And she did her whole thesis around body language. And what she did, she observed that people that had been blind from early life, had never observed other human beings gathered in the herd, they didn't know how to slouch, and they didn't know how to gesture because they'd never witnessed that. So she came up with a group of exercises and dance steps and all kind of movement to teach people that were blind so they could mainstream into a room. So she taught them how to scratch their ears and slouch and all of that kind of stuff. So it made them look like one of us. That's how powerful body language is, and we learn it from each other, you know. I think one of the best communication things I ever heard is I heard my oldest daughter say to my young daughter one time, said, "Don't let Mama brush her hair when she's mad." My girls always had long hair and they had very good necks. Yank, yank, you know. And just how powerful this whole thing is on communication, I want to do a real quick little pop quiz, okay? I want everybody to look around the room and count as many things as you can that are red. Count things that are red. Okay? Okay, look forward now. Close your eyes. Now tell how many things that are in the room that are yellow. Oh, you didn't see too much yellow, huh? Yeah, yeah. So communication is a very powerful thing. And communicating with God, ourselves, and others is a relearnable thing. I think we had that when we were born, the innocence of a baby. And babies communicate pretty well. Wah, I get a bottle. Wah, I get a diaper change. Babies communicate really well. So the dis-ease stops that communication. And I think by today and what Scott and I have been able to learn and share with each other and with the God and other people, that maybe you'll have a better understanding of that it's okay to communicate.
Thanks, hon.
Mm-hmm.
I got here afraid there might be a God. Pretty guilty guy when I walked into your doors, like real guilty. And I was badly confused about a God concept. I think it's a good place to start. You know, as a child, they said, "Well, you want that? Well, pray for it." Okay, I pray for it. One of two things happens. Either I get it, in which case I was skillful or lucky and forget that I prayed for it. Or I don't get it, in which case it's either not a God or there's a God and he doesn't love Scott. Mm-hmm. Pick one. Mm-hmm. It's one of those. So that's how I got here. And Mama, why did Grandma die? Well, it was God's will. Great. That sounds dangerous to me. So I get here terrified of that. I had to break what those words meant, God's will, into two pieces for myself. first piece. What am I going to be when I grow up? Where am I going to live? How much money am I going to make? What's going to happen to my children? Do the communists eventually take over the world? And all of that stuff. And every bit of that violates one day at a time. And so I now consider that entire category as God's plan. Step one, section B says I'm not in management, so I don't need to know what the plan is. I lay all that down. Excuse me, leaves me simply with God's will, and that's what He wants me to do today. Really simplified the whole thing for me. I had an experience. I had the privilege of flying for the United States Air Force for a few years, and we supported Operation Deep Freeze, and I'm flying a 4-engine jet coming out of New Zealand, and we're 8 hours to American Samoa, and we take on fuel, and halfway to Honolulu, we get into the new fuel, and it's contaminated. It's got water in it, and at 35,000 feet, it's about minus 55 centigrade, and the water freezes in the lines, and the jet engine's compressor stalls, what we call it, kind of like backfiring your truck. And we can't stay at altitude. We come down into warmer air. We can run the engines, but we don't have gas to make ECM at this altitude. A jet engine much more efficient at higher altitude. So we climb back up. We can't stay. We come back down. Worst thing you can do for gas mileage is this, and that's what we're doing. And for 4 hours, I thought I was going to die today. And a lot of us thought we were going to die in the next moment or two. We've laid down bikes. We've been in head-on collisions. We looked down gun barrels, okay, for a moment or two. 4 hours is a long time to think you're going to die today. That's a long time. Boy, I promised God if He'd get me out of this one, I was going to quit smoking. Quit drinking. Quit visiting ladies I wasn't married to. Going back to church. Might build some churches. Right. I don't leave anything out of this one. And the fuel gauge just kept saying we can't make it, and yet it kept running. We shot a forced landing at Hickam. They got everything out of our way, and we can't air-to-air refuel this thing. It didn't have it at that time. And we turned final at 9,000 feet. And our decision was if we could keep them turning to what we call high station. I'm going to get too technical. We could make high station for a forced landing. We could at least crash on dry land and have our bodies sent home for burial. That's the conversation in a cockpit when you think you're going to die. Because putting a 300,000 pound into the Pacific Ocean at 130 knots is a bad plan. We're not going to survive that, and we know it. And we touched it down and taxied in, shut them down, and they dipped the tanks like you drip your crankcase. See how much oil you got? I could have walked carrying the amount of jet fuel we had left on the 300,000-pound airplane. We didn't have enough to turn 4 engines on and taxi to the runway. There was not that much left on that plane. And I didn't even check into the quarters. I went straight to the stag bar. And that's a crazy section for those who don't know. They don't have it anymore. And put my bags down on either side of the bar stool. It said, Mai Tai, the big one, pack of Marlboros. And I look at it today through these eyes that you've given me, and this is what I see. In those days when I prayed, I was trying to make Him my God. What I've been taught here is how to make me His man. See, I've found that God's very difficult to train. I don't know if any of you have tried that. I mean, God, okay, I understand you've been running the universe for a few billion years, and you're probably doing okay, but Scott's here now. And I think you've missed a couple of very important points. And that's really what that comes down to, and I think that's why step 11 is so clear. But I had a bad time with this need to tell God what to do. I asked my sponsor, I said, I had about 6 months, and I said, Jerry, they're saying spiritual side of the program this and spiritual side of the program that. If there's a spiritual side to the program, got to be at least one other side. What's the name of it? He said there are two sides. There's the spiritual side and the drunk side. Pick one. I believe he was right. So I think before I can start talking about communication with God, I want to talk about what I like to do with somebody who's new. And I say to them, I want you to lay aside, just for now, what they told you about God. And I really don't care who they are or how fully qualified they claim to be. I have no interest in that at all. I want you to lay that aside for a little while. I want you also to lay aside what you believe and what you think you believe. Because if what you believe worked, we'd probably never met. So, because, I mean, I know you promised God you were going to quit this, right? Didn't you? I did. Are there any pukers in the room? Anybody throw up? The pukers all quit forever. I know they did. Right, there you go. So let's just lay that aside for now. And for those of you who brought your books to class, page 12 in Bill's story, I try to imagine this scene. Here's Ebby, sober about 90 days, who, by the way, the sober alcoholic called the drunk one. We do have precedent for that. And I just hear Bill's brain rattle around in his head like a BB in a boxcar over this stuff in the paragraph at the top of the page about what God was and what and all that. And finally, I can see Ebby saying, why don't you choose your own conception of God? And that concept is so important, they told it to us again on page 93. And I think when the book tells me something more than once, it's just screaming. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic. He does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. And so what I asked him to do is take out a piece of paper and let's write down characteristics you would like God to have. We're laying down what you believe and what you think you believe and what they told you. We're going to put down the characteristics you would like for God to have. I'm going to make some suggestions. If you like them, take them. If you don't take them. And I said, all right, let's hear. And I want single words or very short phrases. All right, this is not a narrative. And usually one of the first two is powerful. And I say, I love that. And Miss Linda says, I got to have a God that's bigger than all the monsters under the bed. And I think that's right. And she also says, I've got to have a God who's big enough to hold my hand while I walk into the dark cave of steps 4 and 5. For those who've been in that cave, it's not dark. But from the outside, the first time, it looks that way. So we've got to have powerful. And then always the first or second one is forgiving. And I always tell them, that's insufficient for me. I got here too guilty for forgiving. I had to have a God that was eager to forgive. Just forgiving wasn't going to get it for a guy as guilty as I was. And then we get sense of humor available to me. Loving, gentle.
Can I put a P.S. on this?
Please.
This is what I call, and women are shocked when I say, when they're having trouble finding their higher power, I said, we're going to take God, a God inventory. And they think we're going to get struck by lightning, the very thought of taking a God inventory. But what Scott is describing is what I have them to do. And I take the piece of paper and I put down one side what the God that you came into the rooms with. And that's usually judging, not available, already took me off the Christmas list, that sort of thing. And then on this side are the positive things, you know, gentleness, available, female qualities, whatever, tree, nature, whatever it is. So I call what he's describing now is a God inventory. And then when they get through, and this happens when women are having trouble finding their higher power. One woman was having the hardest time, and finally I worked with her. The day she was going to come over at 3 o'clock that day, I got the Scrabble game out, and I thought, I'm going to have her pick 5 letters, and we're going to, whatever that spells, we're going to call that her God. We've got to move on with this. But she came into that meeting that she had her God, because we'd done this God inventory. And then I tear it like this, and I put them both down there, and I say, now pick the God of your understanding that you want to hang out with. Guess which side gets chosen? Thank you. I just wanted to put that in.
A couple of the characteristics are a sense of humor. I got to have a God that laughs.
Well,
you don't think God has a sense of humor? Look around the room. I think we're hilarious, don't you?
Yeah.
How about creative? How about wants what's best for me and he knows what it is, and by the way, I don't? Or if I do, how did I get here?
Mm-hmm.
And then what I ask them to do, as I say, I'm not going to ask you to believe that. All of my life, religious people have been saying, believe this. Well, how? Well, just believe it. Well, how? Can't tell you how. That's a gift from a guy in my home group. He says, I can tell you what faith is. Faith is hope with a track record. You can hope that that's right. You start out and hope that. And I'm not going to ask you to fake it. I hate that. That makes me sick. I'm lucky I could say it, not wretch. I faked it too long. I'm going to ask you to act as if. How do you believe you'd conduct yourself if you believe that's what God was? How would you conduct yourself? As a simple experiment, let's conduct yourself that way for a while and just find out what happens. It's what the scientists call a working hypothesis. The term means we have reason to believe something may be true. What we're going to do is now apply it in all cases and just find out what happens. Just simple enough. So let's put that on the road. The reason, by the way, we have to believe it's true is we just bracketed my own concept of God and my program's working. It's that simple. And so we have a place to begin. Yeah.
And we're kind of given a guideline through that. It starts out in the steps. Look at this journey. It starts out calling it that we are powerless and then a higher power. And then it says a God of our understanding. And then later on it just says God. And then we get over to the tradition. And for the first time, they put the only time that God is mentioned is the tradition. They put an adjective in front of it, a loving God. So by the time we've gone through the steps and gotten into their tradition, we are connected with a loving God. And that's the kind of God I needed, a loving God.
One of my gifts is this belief that God forgives me for everything I ever did and He loved me while I was doing it.
I still remember when the guy said that. In my home group, my God got so much bigger that day.
And that I don't have the power to make a mistake so ugly that God can't turn it into something magnificent. That's who I am. That's who He is. It's just lack of power. This simple, just that simple. I just don't have the power. I frequently and regularly watch Him take the very worst things I've ever done and use them as tools to help other people. I see it all the time. That's just what He does. So I got to get out of the business of being afraid of this God. And get into something that has peace for me. My morning prayer, as soon as I realize I'm awake, sometimes my dreams are very vivid these days, is I begin by thanking Him for as many things as I can think of. And that always includes her. And then I invite Him in. I think that opens the channel. And then I invite Him in to run my life. And that's what I say. Please take the reins today. Please run it, whatever you have in mind. And I give you a few laughs. Here's my plan. I got a friend that says he thinks that's the reason God blesses AA so deeply is because he gets so many belly laughs out of our newcomers' prayers and plans. It could be.
What about the friend that spends too much time in his head?
Oh, yeah, another fellow says he spends too much time in his head trying to clear away the wreckage of his future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Bingo.
So anyway, and then I review my plans for the day, and I ask Him to help me send love to the places I'm going today. And I've sent love to every chair in this room before I left my bed this morning.
So that some will be there when you get there.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
I learned it from her.
Yeah.
And I ask Him to not help me not miss any chances to be of service today. A friend of mine says God rigged the game. The givers are the ones that win it all. Yeah, and I think that's right. And the last thing I do, I'll tell you a story. A good friend of mine walked into our home group a number of years ago. He'd just been to his grandfather's funeral, and he was struck. Something really hit him hard while he was there, and he approached his grandmother, and he said, "I think you were a fabulous wife to my grandfather." And she said, "I should have been. I prayed to be that every day." That hit me very hard, and I began the next morning. I do not believe I've missed a morning since. That's a good decade ago. And the last thing I pray each morning is I ask God to help me treasure Linda today. And we know the word treasure, normally used as a noun. We understand it as a verb. It's usually used as a noun. I'm making a point. Within 2 weeks, she didn't know I was in the house. I walked through the den and heard her say to someone on the phone, "Scott treasures me." Yeah. When I ask God for what He wants me to have, I get a lot of help. It's about me getting to the right question. It's always about me getting to the right question. But I had to get out of the business of trying to direct God. It wasn't working for me. My sponsor told me that prayer was not an opportunity for me to change God's mind. It was not a sales presentation. It was an opportunity for God to change mine, which probably needed to be changed. It's kind of an interesting thought. See, I wish I had another good one there for a second. It's gone now. Oh, I bought this watch. I'll be glad to show it to you. It has multiple alarms on it. This morning they were set 11 minutes apart. The second alarm is the get-up time. When the first alarm went off this morning, Linda and I cuddled. We did our morning prayers in each other's arms. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding. And I will grant you that there are mornings when that second alarm awakens one or both of us. I'll give you that. But the step does not say achieved through prayer and meditation. It says sought. And on those mornings, we sought. We absolutely sought. Some wonderful directions on opening and closing your day on page 86. I know most of you are familiar with them. I'll touch on just a couple of points. It says, on awakening. I'd like to observe what it does not say. It does not say after a shower and shave, two over easy and ham, a half a pot of coffee, reading the front page and a fight with her. It says, on awakening. And one of my teachers says that's because a guy like me is capable of making life-devastating decisions between the bed and the bathroom. that I wake up with untreated alcoholism every morning. My disease gets up about between 20 and 30 minutes earlier than I do each morning. Some jumping jacks, some push-ups, maybe a couple of curls or something heavy, and then perches up on the headboard and it waits out my house, and it jumps on me. And I need my treatment right now. And I think that's why it says on awakening. And so I invite God in. And I think it's important. And there's a wonderful thing at the bottom of page 87. It says, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated. A fellow from my home group tells this story. Pause when agitated. He took the first three letters, PWA, and made them his screensaver at work. PWA. That went on for about 2 weeks. And finally, a couple of his coworkers said, what's PWA? And he said, pause when agitated. They said, wow. There's a thought. Yeah. You want to do something on that?
So the reason I had trouble finding God is because I didn't, you know, think I was worth God's time. And also, I seem to have been placed in the position of being God in my life, in your life. And that's why it was so hard for me to take step one. You know, I seem to have all kinds of power. When the car had a flat tire, somehow that was my fault. Or if I picked a restaurant and we had poor service or poor food, it was somehow my fault. And that really comes under the heading of blame. But since I got blamed for so much of that, it seemed like I had a lot of power. And if I got blamed for that much stuff that went on in our lives, that must mean I also have the responsibility of making you happy. So if you were unhappy, that was somehow my fault also. And that was like playing God. And I saw this little saying the other day, and this was so true. It said, I didn't say you did it. I just said I was going to blame you. So that was pretty good, you know. So I had to realize that I was powerless. Once I took step one, then it was easier for me to find this friendly God that we've been talking about. My disease is also one of amnesia. I forget what you've taught me, okay? And I need the visual stuff. So to remember that I have this loving God that is willing to let me hang out with him any time of day, I go back to an old commercial. They're kind of bringing it back for V8 juice, where the people are running around and they haven't had time to eat or anything, and then they realize they could have had a V8 and they hit their heads like this. Well, what I realize now that I'm running around and I'm getting frantic and I'm, you know, taking it all on and I'm, you know, agitated, I go, oh, I could have had an HP. So that helps me, you know. And I heard this wonderful Al-Anon from California, Penny, and she said, I just remember whatever I'm doing that I can always go vertical. I love that expression. Just go vertical. Just go vertical. So that helped a lot. So how do we, so now we've got this loving God that we want to hang out with. So how do you hang out with God? We've already touched on one. We're going to hang out with God mainly two ways. maybe three. We hang out with God by breathing in and breathing out, okay? As long as we're walking around, that we're touching the earth, I think that's hanging out with God. But also, the main things that we do it through prayer and meditation. So we're going to talk about those for just a little bit. I have some favorite Al-Anon prayers that served me well when I first got into Al-Anon and served me well now. And the best one is, God, please keep your arm around my shoulders and your hand over my mouth. That's a great Al-Anon prayer. And see, now that we have this loving God, this is a God that we would want to say prayers with. Another one that came out in our inspirational book that was released in Salt Lake City, it is now out of print, and we've seen this prayer a lot. It says, God, help me be today the kind of person my dog thinks I am. Okay? That's a great prayer. And I've taken that a step further. God, help me be today the kind of person you think I am. That says a lot in just one sentence. And what I have learned is that you can make the prayer of your understanding. It can be anything. And we were really doing some prayers way before we even came in and got this loving God. Help is a prayer. Help is a prayer. It's an asking. And I think we send that prayer up to a loving God. I think thank you is a complete prayer. Thank you. And we have our loving serenity prayer. I mean, that was the anchor when I first got into Al-Anon, because it just says so much. And we say it a lot. The next time you say it, listen to it. Don't say it. Just listen to everybody else say it. And you will see what a powerful prayer it is, okay? It's an amazing prayer.
Don't all do that once. Y'all take turns.
That'd be interesting. You're so technical. That was good. That could happen, yeah. I have a sponsee in Nashville, and she has a very relaxed life, and a lot of times she and her husband have even lived on a boat. But about two or three times a year, she gets intense with her job in the music industry. I mean, she has to be so adult, and she has to be so right on, and she, you know, her meeting count goes down, so you know what kind of person she becomes. I mean, and it's something that's just so unavoidable. And you know, she's having power breakfast and organizing lunches and entertaining dinners. I mean, she's just around this arena all day long. And she says, I don't even have a chance to do any prayer or anything. And I said, okay. And she's in it, you know, she's used to being outside a lot, and now she has to go into a building. So what we worked out are prayers that I said, you know, every time you see a safety pin, you think that that's a touch with God keeping you safe. Okay, like in her purse or at her desk or whatever. Okay, that worked. I learned that from my home group. We give each other safety pins. It's our low-budget version of guardian angels, okay? And I also said, every time you leave the building to go to lunch, don't stay on the sidewalk. If they're walking toward a car, just cross over and just touch the earth for just a minute. And that is your connect with the God of your understanding. Just, you know, just touch the earth. That I learned that from Native American. You know, they embraced the earth. So we embrace the earth with each step that we take when we're touching soil. The other prayer that I'm kind of hesitating around, but it was a very powerful prayer for me, and it has to do with the bedroom. Scott is my third husband. He's my now and forever husband. I believe that with all my heart. But growing up in an alcoholic home, some things happened to me as a young child that sometimes happened to us, that I had to have special attention through counseling. I've gone through fourth and fifth steps with some things that happened to me. And then when it came time for Scott and I to have a loving exchange in the bedroom, some of those old ghosts were going to show up, no matter how much time and energy and prayer of trying to get ready for this, some disconnect would still happen for me in the bedroom.
Can I interrupt that for a second? I know you like for this part to drag out.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sure you all know the answer. You know how to spot a recovery couple on a second date? They're pulling a U-Haul. And we opted not to do it that way. And with the encouragement of a fine sponsor of mine, we put the physical on hold for months. And it was the right thing. And when we decide, we were far enough into it. And it's interesting, if you do it that way and there's a breakup, nobody loses a home group. You know, nobody's devastated. It's really kind of an interesting thing. But, and the courting period was just so wonderful. I would recommend that as highly as I possibly can. I'll be glad to talk in detail with anybody that wants to. But so when she says it was time to go into the bedroom, it wasn't like after midnight on the first date or anything. I wanted you to know it was months.
Mm-hmm. And so there was some anxiety around that. And I have to tell you, I'm going to go ahead and put this out there. I usually just tell this on at women's retreats. But so we planned a loving date. Okay. And when Scott showed up for our loving date, one of my first things that showed up on my four-step list that I was a disappointment to my parents because I was born a girl. They did not even have a girl's name picked out. They had no interest in having a girl. Of course, they love me now, but they wanted a boy. So my first amends to my parents was that I was a disappointment, you know, to them. And I'd carried that all through my life. And when Scott showed up for our very wonderful date, he had a bouquet of flowers, and he had a balloon that said, "It's a girl." He honored me, and he said, "I'm so glad you're a girl." So that was a healing that happened. Okay, yeah.
I haven't heard you sharing that.
Mm. Yeah, it was a wonderful thing. But meanwhile, I'm over here going like, I want to be appropriate. I love and care about this man. I believe that the physical exchange is a celebration of love. And but what am I going to do? I mean, I've got these old haunts that are just hovering. No matter how much healing I'd had, the bedroom had not been a safe place. So I did what you told me to do. I went to God in a silent time, and I was given what I call the bedroom prayer. And I pass this on because we are talking about communicating with God. And I'm getting to do a significant communication with another human being. And long story short is I can take God into that exchange. And my bedroom prayer is simply this. God, help me stay in the moment. That's all. That's the whole prayer. God, help me stay in the moment. And what I find out is when I say that prayer is that it takes away my old thoughts. It takes away my curiosity about Scott's past history. You know, I was always curious about that. It also takes away that morning after. Is it going to be okay? Is he going to notice that I've gained weight? All of that stuff. And what I've discovered, if you pray that prayer and then you stay in the moment and then nature takes care of the rest. Are you going to fan me? I'm so sorry. I didn't. Okay. Yeah. Is it time for a break? Is it? You know, I tell you, this is just an ad lib. Some of y'all are meeting Scott for the first time. Some of you know him by tape. Some of you have been at other conferences with him. But I would say what I want to tell you is the man that you experience is who he is 24/7. This man does not act one way at a meeting and a different way at home. Okay? And I think that is a mature, sobriety, sober man. And I honor you with that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, wasn't that fantastic?
And I'll just step out there. And we're old, and I love our bedroom, okay? Woo-hoo! Ha, 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 ha
I'll be 65 years old against very long odds next month. And I've got some good news for you younger guys.
This is your fault.
That's my fault. Thank you.
Can I take it for a while before you go send any more trouble?
Part of the communication thing is about having a relationship with somebody. And if I want to have a relationship with somebody, the first thing I have to remember is I don't do all the talking. And so if I want to have a relationship with God, I can't do all the talking. And I think that's what meditation's about. Mm-hmm. And late this afternoon, we're going to do kind of a double guided imagery meditation. It's one she did at the Florida State Convention.
I've been asked to do the one about the acorn.
The acorn.
It's
okay.
Not taped.
And then I'll do what we call the love meditation. I'll give you kind of a prep on that. We talk a lot about doing the next right thing, that recovery really comes down to doing the next right thing, staying in the moment. I have discovered for me a last right thing. And the last right thing each day is for me to go to bed at a reasonable hour, to do my evening prayer and meditation, and have, for me, two alarms set so that I can awaken the next morning with a full night's rest, with plenty of time to start my day on a spiritual note. Failure to do the last right thing tonight sets me up to not be able to do the first right thing tomorrow morning. Frequently, I'm privileged. I get phone calls from us, from different places, and from new guys I work with, and guys I sponsor, and the guys they sponsor. And when anybody complains that their morning prayer and meditation thing isn't going too well, my first question is, let's talk about last night. Did you stay up till 1 in the morning playing computer games? What time did you have your last cup of coffee? Did you have the big piece of chocolate cake at 9:30? Why is it that you don't have a full night's sleep so that you can start the next morning? For me, it's been a very important piece. I talked a few minutes ago about this thing about sending love that I do each morning that I learned from Linda. A number of years ago, my business was doing pretty good, and I had an assistant, and she is a very spiritual lady. And we're multi-line manufacturers reps, and without getting too technical, we deal with a lot of factories and we deal with a lot of customers, and we kind of stand in the middle and sell in both directions. And there was a woman who was a pricing authority at our biggest factory. She represented a third of our income. If this one goes away, we're done, same day. And we were absolutely certain that there was a broom double parked in their parking lot somewhere. We decided she'd been that way since that house fell on her sister. And and we were starting every morning just saying, oh, geez, I hope we don't have to deal with her again today. And finally, Sheila one morning said, wait a minute. Neither one of us believes that what we're doing right now is the right thing, that we're not supposed to be running this woman down. And what we decided to do, and I'm pretty sure that was a Monday, what we decided to do was to turn the phones off, and for the first 5 minutes of each business day, we would sit and literally send love to this woman. And the way I do that is I get this mental image of a column of love. It's white, silver white, and it shimmers. It comes out of heaven right down through the top of my head and out my chest as I breathe. And then I see her kind of suspended in space and this stuff swirling around her. And I can't explain any better than that. And we would sit for 5 minutes and do that. Later that week, that woman called me to chat. We couldn't believe it. We kept waiting for the hammer to fall. She called our office to chat. And it became a habit. And about 3 months later, I went to Chicago to the National Trade Show, walked into a room this size. Several hundred people in the room at a trade show function, and she was bumping into people, almost knocking them down to get to me, to hug me, to tell me that I was the best rep in the country. If she had more people like me and Sheila to deal with her life, the room came to a halt. Because we weren't the only ones that had the broom experience with this lady. And I spent the rest of that trade show with people come up to me and saying, what did you do? And I said, well, you aren't going to like it, but I'll tell you. And that's what we did. And she left that company a couple of months later and continued and stayed in touch with us for another 2 years. I sponsor a fellow who writes TV shows, and he got crosswise with a woman producer, and it was not pretty. And I gave him the assignment before he left home each morning to sit in his meditation and send her love for 5 minutes, and to get to work at least 5 minutes early and to sit in his car and send her love for 5 minutes. Later that week, and it was our custom at that time that he took a coffee break around 10 in the morning, he'd come out and get in the car and call me on his cell phone. And one rainy morning later that week, he called me, and we're chatting. He says, I heard a tap. He said, just a minute. And I hear his window go down. I hear a woman's voice. I hear his voice. I hear the window go back up. He said, you aren't going to believe it. He said, it was that producer. She's going to Starbucks. Well, no, she'd give me a cup of coffee and a muffin. And I don't know that anything will stand against love.
Mm.
I'm not aware of anything that will. I haven't seen anything stand against it. My sponsor told me that serenity is not freedom from the storm. Serenity is peace in the midst of the storm. And I'm going to tell you how and when I got that lesson, how and when it was presented to me. I don't know if I got it yet or not. You know, it comes and goes. You got a friend that says life's tough. First you get the test, then you get the lesson. Then if you don't get the lesson, you get the test again. Yeah. Yeah. And where was I going with that? Does anybody know? Do you ever meditate, try to get your mind to the place where there's nothing? Well, it just worked for me right here in front of you.
Well, we are talking about meditation.
Mm-hmm. I don't know where I was going with that story. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I moved out. Some of you heard me tell the story, but I moved out of the house my first wife and I were living in when I was sober 6 years. And it was because I was about to strike her. And I just couldn't stand it. And she had, I'm not taking her inventory, she has every reason to be angry with me. I am guilty multiple times, all right? It's not about her. And I just finally realized one day that I was going to hit her, and that was going to be a bad one. And so I just walked out and got an apartment, moved within 48 hours. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't believe in divorce. I also knew if I lived with her, I was going to hit her. It's coming. And I prayed about it, and I was given a gift, and I share it with you. I don't ask you to believe this came from God. I want you to know I do believe it did. And this is what I got. I got a gift. And the gift was three prayers, and I prayed them every morning. And the first prayer is, God, if it's your will for us to be together, put us together. The second one, if it's your will for us to be apart, put us apart. Those are the easy ones. Here's the one that counts. God, if it's your will for me not to know today, leave me not knowing. If it's your will for me not to know today, leave me not knowing. When I can pray that and mean it, I can be at peace in the midst of the storm. It's so important for me not to borrow pain. This one day at a time thing certainly means don't drink today, but it also means live only in this day. If I can reach far enough into the future or far enough into the past and find enough pain and pull it into today, I can make today so bad I can't stand it. And I have to have immediate relief. And that's why one day at a time is so important, is I can't afford to borrow pain. Price is too high. So that's what that prayer is about, is the word today is such magic. One of my teachers makes this observation out of how it works. It says, there's one who has all power, that one is God, but you find him now. He says, now isn't when I find God, it's where. My God is the God of right now. Dr. Paul used to say, those of you who don't know, wrote that thing on acceptance, that it's like he and God were on a tandem bicycle. God's up front steering, he's in the back pedaling. He says, I can steer anytime I want to, but he will not pedal. And when I get off into the future, I'm pedaling. That I've got to get out of the business of trying to fix the rest of my life. Because among other things, it doesn't work. And as much as I hate that, it just simply doesn't work. Yeah. Go ahead. We got another about 15 minutes.
More about some prayer is that prayer is a great tool to use with your sponsees. And a lot of times I'm traveling, but something's going on big in a sponsee's life, and I'll say, tonight at 10 o'clock, I'll be on my knees, and wherever you are, you get on your knees at 10 o'clock. So we hold the prayer space together, and that makes it very powerful. Another thing is, you've heard the term putting your heads together. Well, sometimes with your sponsee, get down on the floor and put your heads together and do a prayer. One time, the Native Americans used to sleep and put their heads together, and they found out the next morning they had similar dreams. So there is a connect, you know. That'd also be a nice way to do a meditation sometime, to put your heads together. And are we still talking about prayer, or are we going to talk about meditation now? Do we need to pray about it?
Let me know when it's my turn.
Let's see.
One of the other observations I have in sponsorship is that each time I have contact with someone I sponsor, sometimes when they visit our home and we sit down in our meditation room to talk, mm-hmm. I always say, let's take a few moments and invite God into this, and I'll just meet you back here. And I stop and do that, and I ask him to do it. And when we both have our eyes open and we start talking, sometimes when I'm talking on the phone with him, I do that. Or sometimes I just invite God in to open both hearts without saying anything about it. But I rarely have contact with somebody I sponsor without inviting God into it. I think I was sober 6 months when my sponsor told me he wanted me to start sponsoring it. And I said, I don't think I'm ready. And I said, I hope you don't ever think you are.
Yeah.
And I've been able to share that. I understand. I didn't understand then, but I do understand now. I hope I don't ever think I'm ready. Yeah, that I always need that help.
And we ask for prayer support. Sometimes Scott's going to go into a big meeting. He'll say, I'm going to be in that meeting at 10 o'clock. So whatever I'm doing, I pray. I stop and I pray for him at that time. And this seems to be bubbled up. Also, when we have different assignments in our household, because our household is, it's a shared vision of how we're going to operate our home. And so I do certain tasks, and Scott does certain tasks. And one of my tasks is I do the laundry. And I have to tell you, when I'm folding the laundry, I put a prayer blessing in it. Because those clothes, that undershirt, those garments are going to go around and be with him all day long. So I just put a little prayer in them as I fold them up. Well, it's better than starch.
Yeah.
I was a mean pre-Al-Anon.
Wow.
So, are we going to get to talk about meditation yet?
Would you like to?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, go ahead.
Wait, no, go on. Keep going.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So, we've said that the prayer is our action on our part, and the meditation is sitting and listening to the God of your understanding. And I had to learn this from a bumper sticker. And it wasn't one of those bumper stickers like Easy Does It or One Day at a Time. I like those because those are, you know, you can have a little meeting going down the interstate. This bumper sticker was for a dog obedience school, okay? And I was driving over to visit my parents, and I saw this bumper sticker, and in tiny letters it said something like, Jones Dog Obedience School. And in large letters it said, Sit Happens. You got it, okay? And I needed that. I was so busy because, you know, if I stayed busy enough, I thought the disease couldn't catch up with me. And so I got it that I could sit in my backyard, I could sit by the lake, I could sit in a meeting. And that was the beginning of my meditation. Okay? Now, before I got into Al-Anon, I was always a seeker, and I read all the books. You know, I could practically levitate that table over there, you know? And so once I loved that step, 11, that I thought, well, I can do that one right away. So I'd get up in the morning and I'd think, now where's that CD I wanted to listen to, and where's that candle, and where's the light? And I'd spend so much time getting ready for meditation that I wouldn't have time for meditation. Okay? And what I know is that God made enough time. Anytime I skip meditation, I'm giving big gaps in the day, like the traffic stops. Okay, I'm giving big gaps I'm in an office and somebody's late for an appointment. You know, meditation can be anywhere. It can be the meditation of your understanding. And meditation is simply hanging out with God. And we're going to give some examples, and we're going to do a guided imagery at 4:30 at the end of all this workshop. We're going to, those that want to stay, we're going to do a meditation. But the thing about meditation is, if you've got the loving God, and if you haven't had a lot of coffee, you're able to calm yourself, okay? I used to have to meditate really fast because I drink coffee, okay? You're laughing. And I used to think that the meditation had to be perfect. It doesn't. One time I was in a kind of a bad place, and Scott was going to be gone that morning, and so I'd marked off this time to do a real long sit happens with God meditation. And it's all perfect. I'm in my chair, and I'm all cozied up. And I realize that I have put the tennis shoes in the dryer. And you know what that sounds like. Quiet, 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 thump. Quiet, 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 thump. And I thought about that. My first thing was, I can't believe you did that to yourself. The first thing was, I was going to beat myself up for not being perfect and getting ready for my meditation. Scott taught me that beating ourselves up is never the first right thing. And we're supposed to do the next right thing. So I thought, well, what is this about? And I thought, maybe that's part of my meditation. And I thought, I bet those socks in there are having a great time. They're floating around. And the reason that was in there is because we'd gone fishing and waded the creek the day before. So I was able to pull back nature, and I was able to use that rather than fight it. You know, meditation is just like when you're going down the road and you're driving and you see a billboard and you look at the billboard, but then you bring yourself back to driving down the road. That's the thing. Once you get in your meditation zone, think people are going to cough, they're going to sneeze, our bodies are going to think, because that's what they do. But all you do is just gently bring yourself back. Al-Anon has, you know, all those books I had were all wrapped up on this one page of Al-Anon. It's just what's so amazing. And this is in our Courage to Change book on page 338, December 3rd. It said, "What is meditation?" Al-Anon leaves that question open for each of us to answer in his own way. And here's some experience from other Al-Anon members. One member says, "To me, meditation is a higher spiritual awareness. I practice remembering that every action can serve as a spiritual purpose." I know one of Scott's mentors, Sam, he gets up and he says, "Thank you, God, for this day. Thank you, God, for the hot water. Thank you, God, for my toothbrush." I mean, every movement was a spiritual awareness. And I love that one. Another person says, "I go to a quiet place, close my eyes, and repeat the words of the serenity prayer to myself in a gentle voice." That sounds great. Another one says, "I get beyond my thoughts. I concentrate on my breathing and counting from 1 to 10 over and over. I just breathe in and out." So just breathing in the good and exhaling the toxic. That's a meditation. One person says, "I focus on a flower, and when my thoughts stray, I accept that my mind is doing its job thinking, but then I gently return to my subject." Okay? It could be a candle. It could be a flower. It could be a wonderful scene in nature that you call back. And this last one I absolutely love, and I do this a lot in my hammock because it fits so well. It says, "In my mind, I picture my higher power's hands. One by one, I place my problems and my worries, my joys and my gratitude into those hands. And finally, I climb into." And in a hammock, that works really well. So meditation is of our understanding. And I think any time we're totally in the moment, that's a meditation. I think our shared healthy laughter, because we're right there together in the moment, that's a meditation. I think that when my dad, who is not in this program, still a very active drinker, I think when he hits a golf ball and he watches it and he is able to describe it later, I think that's a meditation for him because he is so in the moment, okay? To me, meditation and recovery is allowing all of me to show up at the same time. My emotional self, my physical self, my energy self, all of me finally shows up at the same time. When I was a little girl, I was trying to be an adult and take care of my parents. Then when I became an adult and got out in the business world, I was a scared little girl inside. You know, thanks to recovery, all of me has finally shown up at the same time. And I can take all of that to meditation. One of my favorite times to do meditation is taking my car through the car wash. I turn off my cell phone, and then it's just me and God in there with all that cleansing suds going by, okay? I think that's a great one. When I don't have time for meditation, this is a true story, and I had to get meditations that had handles on them, a suitcase, so I could take them with me, okay? True story in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm a busy woman. I'm still working. And I'm very, you know, high-powered businesswoman. I'm in recovery. I've got to sponsor people. I'm a busy woman. And that morning, I didn't have time for meditation. So it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I run by the grocery store to pick up 1 gallon of milk. And I'm standing in the line, 15 items or less line. And the lady in front of me has 22 items. I've counted them. And I'm very busy. And she's in this line. And I remember that I didn't do meditation that day. So maybe this is the time that God gave me. So what I do is at another time, I visualized a container above my head. It can be anything you want it to be. It can be a cardboard box, a terracotta clay pot, a crystal bowl. It can be anything you want it to be. And you start collecting things in this container above your head, like a walk on the beach, a hug from your sponsor, a smell of a puppy, the giggle from your grandchildren. And you collect all of that, and it's just hanging there above your head. And it's kind of turned into this wonderful, golden, loving goo, okay? And so now I'm standing in this line. This woman has 22 items, and then she's trying to write, it says cash only, and she's trying to write an out-of-state check. True story. And then the little cash register has that little pink thing down on the side of it. That means they're going to have to exchange it. I mean, I am here forever, okay? And I realize that God's given me this time to do a meditation. So I hold on to my 1 gallon of milk. I breathe in. I remember this wonderful golden goo above my head. And now I tip it over, and it just washes down me. And this wonderful, loving things in my life just drip down me like wax going down the side of a candle. And I'm refreshed, and I'm in the moment. And I can open my eyes and say, looks like you're an out-of-town visitor. I hope you have a safe trip and a fun trip in our city. You know, nothing has changed except my thinking, except my thought. So I believe you can do those meditations any time you want.
I think we're going to go ahead and take a 21-minute and 14-second break.
21 minutes?
Yeah.
Woo-hoo. Okay. Yay.
I love it.